Now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, so please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Shauna.
Up a little bit.
Right there?
Okay. Hi, my name is Shauna. I'm an alcoholic. Very grateful to be sober today. Very grateful to be free from the bondage of alcohol and other things. This program saved my life. My sobriety date is 5/22/2006. I have 11 years sober. I'm one of those miracles. I'm just very grateful to be here, and my family's here. This is the first time they've ever really seen me speak, so that's kind of exciting. Okay, I'd like to welcome the newcomers. I'm here to tell you that you will never have to pick up again if you don't want to. And you only have to change one thing, everything. That's what they told me when I came here. And what it was like. Okay, we have to go back what it was like. Let's see. I come from a long line of alcoholics and addicts on both sides of my family. I used to call it like a generational curse. I always thought I was destined to fail. My dad was a drug dealer. My real mother wasn't really in the picture. She was schizophrenic and had drug issues. And my stepmother was an alcoholic. She raised me and my brother from the time we were babies. There was a lot of chaos and drama in our house. My dad's business partner at the time, some of you old-timers might know him, was Jack Ramsey. Some of you guys know. So there was a lot of chaos and drama, and when my dad and stepmom had split up, my dad went to prison, and my mom took my half-brother and my stepbrother, went to Alaska, and my dad went to prison, and me and my brother were separated and went into foster homes. And I just remember always feeling, I was about 12 when I went to foster homes, and just always feeling like, I guess the best way to describe me was in chronic emotional pain. That's all I always felt. I think I had my first suicide attempt at 13 years old, and always felt different and not part of anything and moved around a lot. And so when I picked up my first drink at age 15, I'll never forget it, the way it felt when it went down and that warm feeling. It was like I transformed. All that pain and everything just kind of went away, you know. And I remember thinking, wow, this is awesome. You know, I'm awesome. I remember thinking. And more. That's all I remember, more. And then the rest of the night went to shit after that, pretty much. And that's pretty much how I did. From that, alcohol really opened the door for me for a lot of things. For me, alcohol and drugs went hand in hand. I didn't do one without the other. And it just seemed like from then on, I just started down this downward spiral, kind of, you know. And I just wanted to feel that way all the time. I became a young mom at 17 years old. And I remember thinking all I wanted to do was party, you know. I would leave this little girl wherever, with whoever, whenever. I did not care. It was about partying and having a good time, you know. And I took out all my frustrations and everything out on this little girl. I just wanted to not feel anymore, you know. And then about a week before Christmas, her father had killed my brother in a drunk driving accident. He had said my brother was driving, but he was driving, and I found out years later that he was, and he carried that burden with him, and he was 19 at the time. So that seemed to add to more pain and that kind of stuff. And I just drank more, and just, I was all about the party and good time. And then a few years later, I got in some trouble with CPS, you know, and going through custody and stuff with her dad. He had an attorney. I didn't. And I ended up signing over my rights as a mom. I didn't know I did that. And so I went to visit her. And I just kind of gave up. I just didn't feel like really fighting it and stuff. So I continued on drinking and doing my thing. And one day I kind of was thinking to myself, you know, I know what my problem is. It's Visalia. So I thought, shit, that's what it is. I just got to move, you know. So I sold my car, furniture, everything, and I moved to Hawaii. I didn't know anybody there. That's just how I did. I always was led by my emotions. I never thought about consequences. I just reacted and then just went for it. So I lived there a couple years, and the only thing that had changed in that few years I was there was my surroundings. I was still the same chaos, the same drama, the same another failed relationship. And then it was time to come home. I kind of wore out my welcome there pretty much. And I came back home. My first couple weeks I was here, I met my first husband. Always seemed to be a man in my life. And met my first husband, and not soon after coming back, my daughter's father was killed in a motorcycle accident, and I was a mom again. Got my daughter back. And, you know, getting together with my first husband, it all seemed, everything seemed to calm down for once in my life, you know, and I did really good for the first few years. I think it was because I was pregnant for the next 3 years, because I had three more kids, one right after another, and all seemed to be pretty good until those old feelings started coming back of that anxiousness and not feeling worthy enough, and all those feelings come back. And after I had my son Jack, it was my fourth child, I just kind of started drinking more, started going out more, started doing other things, and was hitting it hard. My husband at the time was a normie, you know, he was a school teacher, and he had not a clue what was going on with me, thought maybe I was depressed or something, I don't know. And I'd say about after a year or so, and I would be gone nights, I wouldn't come home, always just a lot of chaos and drama and confusion, and finally one day I ended up telling one of the family members what I had been doing, you know, drinking and using, and they thought that, well, maybe if we come over, cook a few meals, babysit a couple days, you know, you'll be, and pray it away. You know, you're going to be good. It's all going to be good. I was like, yeah, okay. So my mother-in-law at the time came over and kind of watched over me, and that was good for about a week, I'd say. And then I continued on down that downward path and drinking and going driving with the kids under the influence, you know, that kind of thing. And finally, one day I came to my husband and I said, look, this is what I'm doing. You know, I can't stop drinking. I can't stop using. I think I need, and I showed him where I kept my stash. And I said, I think that I need to go one of those rehab places or something, you know, I don't know. And so, okay, I'm going to get someone to watch the kids for us, so we can go find you a rehab to go to. And I was like, okay, can you take the kids with you? He's like, no, I'll be right back. And something told me, hide your stuff. So, and I had been drinking all night, and And next thing I know, there's a knock at the door, and it's the cops. And I'm like, that's not the kind of help I was wanting. And the cops are at the door, and I was arrested. And you have to remember, though, I put my ex-husband through a lot of stuff. So, I mean, he was pretty ticked. So they arrested me. Of course, they didn't find anything or anything, but I was drunk and under the influence. So they held me for a few hours at the jail. And then I still was adamant about, I think I need to go to rehab. So they found me a place, 11th hour is where I ended up going. It was supposed to be for like a 30-day program. So when I went into the rehab, I remember my first words were like, she, he, them, they. You know, I was a injustice collector of the highest order. I could recall in vivid detail down to what they were wearing and the day they pissed me off. I mean, that's just how it was. And one guy, counselor, said, shut up, sit down, you're the problem. I'm like, what? You know? Yeah, I didn't like that. So I still wasn't really getting it. And then, you know, I was almost to where I was going to graduate the 30 days. You know, I had a really hard time in there. It was really hard, actually, when my family would come in and my ex-husband would come in. And he'd say, you know, since you've been gone out of the house, it is so peaceful. It is so quiet, you know. And it was like, ouch, you know. And it was true, you know. And I remember a guy there would make fun of me because I used to say that I wasn't paranoid. I just had a heightened sense of awareness about things. He's like, okay, yeah. When I went into rehab, I was 89 pounds. So inside rehab, though, actually was when I went to my first AA meeting. I'm back up here. And I remember going to my first AA meeting, and they looked at me, and they were, I didn't even say anything. And they were just like, wow, hang in there. It's going to be all right. And I'm thinking, God, do I look that bad? I thought I was looking good. And so anyways, that was really hard. And I had almost 30 days. I was supposed to go to court. I had 30 days before I was supposed to appear in front of court. And the night before I was supposed to appear in court, I relapsed inside the rehab. Some girl had brought some stuff in, and we snuck out of the rehab, got drunk, and knowing I had court the next day. And so the next day I went before the judge, and I was under the influence of alcohol and other substances, and he said, Shauna, he goes, do you know that you're facing felony or facing child endangerment charges? And I was like, no, I did not know that. And he says, well, you're going to need an attorney probably. You're going to probably come back in 30 days. And I was like, okay. So I told my rehab place, I told on myself, which I usually don't do, but I did. I said, look, I want to help, but it's kind of hard, you know, with people bringing stuff in. So they said, Shauna, come back in. So I did another 30 days because I think you're going to need another 30 days, Shauna. So I was like, all right. So this time I kind of surrendered a little bit, but I still didn't see my part in anything. I just couldn't see my part in anything. You know, I was just always a victim. And so I did the 30 days. By the end of the 30 days, I was actually kind of afraid to leave. You know, I was in my bubble. And but that's what introduced me to AA. Started, they drove us to meetings every day on this bus, you know, and stuff. So when I got out, I did an aftercare program, got out. But I wasn't with a sponsor. I didn't work steps or anything. And it wasn't long before I was back at it again. And then my husband couldn't handle anymore, pretty much. Was going through our divorce, and and I thought, okay, I got to do this. All right. And I'd stay sober like about a week or so and then relapse again. And see, when I'm under the influence, I don't know what it is, but I want to take myself out. You know, that's just how I do, you know. I think part of me wanted to live or wanted to die, but the other part of me wanted to live. I just didn't really know how to live. And I had tried to commit suicide again. I was under the influence. And I was at the hospital, lost my kids, had supervised visits, and said, okay, this time. And luckily, some people from AA, they kind of took me in because I couldn't go back to the house, and took me in. And I think I stayed sober because I was so pissed. So I was like, I'll show you. I'll stay sober. You know, I didn't work the steps. I didn't get honest. I switched one addiction for another. You know, it was always either men or something. It's always something else. And just kind of played the game for about almost a year. And during this time, I got pregnant with my fifth child from someone I met at the Lano Club. Don't go there, you get pregnant. Okay, I'm just saying. No, I'm just joking. I'm just kidding. And so, so funny. So I stayed sober for about a year, and I had a business partner at the time. We did house cleaning. We had a little house cleaning company, and I had my daughter. I had another daughter. She was a few months old or so. I think maybe 6 months old. And had a little over a year sober, and we were at a Christmas party, and my business partner said, you can have just one. She didn't know me when I was in my disease. You could just have one drink, right? I was all, yeah, sure. And I took that first drink, and it was like something inside said, here we go, you know. And I stayed gone from the program for over 2.5 years. And when they say this disease is progressive, they are not lying. I picked up exactly where I left off. Alcohol, meth. That's just for me. That's just my story. They just both for me go hand in hand. I have to have them both. I had just gotten my kids back too, right before this. We got back 50-50 custody. I had everything going me. It was during Christmas time when I went back out. So I was just like, oh my gosh. And things got worse, you know, the insanity and the craziness. And I would be alone. I'd withdraw a lot from everybody, that kind of type of thing. And then finally, it just got to where I just couldn't take it anymore, you know. I think I came to my ex-husband and told him that, you know, I think for the kids, for their well-being, I thought in my head I was doing it for my children, you know, that I'll drop all child support. You can have most of the custody, and I'll have visitation. I thought I was doing it for their well-being, but I really think I just wanted them off my ass so I can continue doing what I was doing is really what it was. So things got really worse, and I think there was another suicide attempt in there, failed one. And one day this guy tells me what an ugly person I was under the influence. That guy right there. And something he said just clicked. I don't know what it was. And I thought, you know what, maybe my problem is me, you know? And I thought, no, it's him. He's an asshole. Yeah. And something got my brain thinking, you know, and it was kind of, I knew if I didn't make some drastic changes in my life, that something really bad was going to happen. So I remember surrendering finally. And I dropped to my knees and I yelled out as loud as I could. I mean, probably neighbors heard me, thought I was nuts or something. And I screamed out. I said, God, please help me. I can't do this anymore. You see, God doesn't take it from you until you let go. And not even God himself will keep you, make you stay sober if you don't want to. So I know that my higher power is God. I know God was up there going, it's about time, Shauna. Okay. And, you know, there was no big burning bush or anything, you know, nothing magical happened right then. And I remember after, you know, a few days, I guess God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. I just stayed sober, managed to stay sober a few days. And I remember the committee in my head was so loud, you know. And I remember I was driving to Jack Ramsey's house to clean. The thought of going to a meeting never entered my mind. I never thought to go back to AA. It just didn't occur to me. And I was driving, and it was like this whisper rose up above the loud noise in my head, and it rose up above it, and it said, Shauna, go back to meetings. And I remember going, what? Meetings? I'm not going to meetings. There's people there, you know. And they say, if you ever hear that small voice inside, and it's contrary to your natural desires, it's probably God talking. Something said, I better listen to that. So I was like, okay, I guess I'll go back to meetings. So I'm going to do this. And this time, when I went back to meetings, I thought, okay, I'm going to get me one of those sponsor things. And I'm going to do everything opposite than what I did before. And I did. I got me a sponsor. And then I had to get honest with stuff. Because, you know, I didn't just have a drinking problem and stuff. I had a thinking problem, you know. And I had to, they said, Shauna, I said, I don't trust anybody. They said, Shauna, you don't have to trust everybody. You know, you have to just pick one person and tell on yourself, okay? I was like, okay, you know, and I would do that. I'd say, you know, I feel like drinking, I feel like using. I was in so much pain, I will say, my first getting sober. I felt like I was thawing out, you know, there was all these emotions and stuff. And I would tell on myself. I'd say, you know, I kind of set up this one guy for doing something he didn't do. And they're like, you're going to have to make it right. They like gave me a conscience and stuff. Damn me. I'm just kidding. And they gave me a conscience. And so I would have to, you know, tell on myself and that kind of stuff. And they said, Shauna, you know, I would go to 90 meetings, 9 days, probably even more, probably 2-3 meetings in a day I would go. That's how desperate I was. I remember one time just wanting to use so bad. Ole was there. He remembers this. Where are you at, Ole? There you are. And I think Brent, is it Brent? Yeah. I kind of basically kicked open the doors of the Lotto Club and said, I'm here to clean your bathrooms. I wish I would have checked them first before I volunteered to do that, because they were pretty scary in there. And just whatever I could do to stay sober, because that's how bad I did not want to go back to where I came from. And I would clean those bathrooms. And I would go to meetings. And they say, Shauna, you want to stay sober? You got to get in this service. You know, and I remember, like, to me, God speaks to me through you guys, through your stories and whatever. And I couldn't remember a lot of stuff, you know. So I would carry a notebook with me and I'd write stuff down. Either something someone said or somehow they got through this or that. Or it didn't matter what I was going through. You guys had this solution. Every time you'd say something I was pondering, even if I kept it to myself, you guys had the answer through your story and what you shared. And I remember one time wanting to know what my purpose was. And I thought, God, I'm going to ask my pastor, you know, what's my purpose, you know? And I remember thinking, maybe it's to write a book or something, even though I'm not very good at writing. Or maybe it's this. I always thought it was something about me, you know. And my pastor was busy that day or something. And I remember going to a meeting, and this guy was talking about how he was pondering what his purpose was. And my ears perked up. I was like, okay, this is God talking to me, Shauna, listen. You know, and he said, he asked his sponsor what his purpose was, and he says his primary purpose was to be of maximum service to God and our fellow man. And I'm like, helping others. Hey, I could do that. Yeah, all right. So that's kind of what I did. I got into service. I joined HNI. I started helping at the jails. And then I remember praying to God, careful what you pray for, because I prayed and I said, God, how do I get out of myself? And also, I want to help others too. And I went to my sister's house to clean, and she said, guess what, Shauna? I signed you up for a 26.6 mile marathon for Nike's women to fight cancer or something. I said, excuse me, you remember I smoked at the time, you know. So I didn't exercise. The only thing I ran from was like, you know, law maybe back. That was about it. But I didn't run. And something told me, Shauna, this is what you're supposed to do. And I said, a marathon? Oh, God. Okay. And I did. I trained. It got me out of my head. It's just like the Switzer said, this is a direction. Take it. And I did. I trained. I did it. And I did a full marathon in San Francisco. I couldn't believe I did that. Yeah. I'm not sure how. Raised the money for it. Did it. I can't even walk to the mailbox now, but, you know, it's all good. So, this program's really given me a lot back. You know, I remember watching the old timers when they would read the promises, you know, and they'd have their eyes closed like they knew this, they had this secret or something, you know, and the smile on their face. I was like, what is that when they're reading the promises? Why are they like that, you know? And I know what it was. It was the freedom that they had, that was their secret, you know, to me. And I got to get a little bit of that, and I got to see it. It took a while. I fought it a little bit, but a little bit at a time. They taught me how to forgive myself. That was the big thing. And forgive myself. And I see my little girl that's right here, that she's all big now. I'm so grateful. These are the gifts that my sobriety has given me. These wonderful children who aren't afraid of me today. I don't think, unless maybe I yell at them, or I don't know, when they don't clean a room or something. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me so much. I'm so grateful to be free. My kids bet that I would cry. I said, I ain't going to cry. So they're paying up their debts right now. You know, you owe me two, you owe me three. I can't even just begin to describe, you know. They taught me how to forgive myself. They taught me how to hug. I didn't really like to hug much when I first came here, you know, and I remember it was Alice. She taught me how to hug. Sean, get in here and give me a hug. And she'd squeeze me like, argh. I guess I still kind of do it sometimes, but, you know, but for the most part. And these wonderful women here, they would call me on my shit all the time. You know, they say your true friends will stab you in the front, tell you what you don't want to hear. And they would, and they stabbed me and stabbed me. Yeah. And they tell me, no, you're wrong. You know, okay, I need to make an amends. And they used to always, if you ever think that, they would always tell me, okay, an expectation is a premeditated resentment. You know, that was another thing on doing my amends, you know, because I thought, okay, I'm going to make my amends. It's going to go this way. It doesn't always go that way. You know, that ex-husband of mine, I thought, I'm going to say my amends and say sorry for this and that, and he's going to probably cry. No, he's like, you lying whore. Although, oh, that didn't really go that way. That didn't go how I expected. But that's okay. So, Don't give up on your son. Don't give up. There's, you know, sometimes you have to do a living amends. I mean, he now, I think he's still a little bitter, but he's better than what he was. I think I had to do a living amends. I am, you know, his wife and I know each other real well, and I literally moved about 6 houses down. He's like, really, Shauna, you had to like move down the street from me? So we bought a house down there. But no, just those are the gifts that AA has given me, you know, to be able to talk to him, and he talks to me, you know, and we're, you know, we get along, you know, and I see my part in things, you know, I try to, you know, where was I at fault, that kind of thing now, whereas I didn't before. I'm just so grateful for everybody here, and I've seen some amazing people here, amazing stories, people, I mean, that can go through so much stuff, dying, you know, and they'll come in smiling and grateful, and I think, man, I don't have a bad day. I'm not compared to some, you know, and they can still come in here smiling, still be sober, go through cancer and all those things, pushing in their oxygen tank, you know. I said, yep, I could do it too. You know, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis last year, and I was kind of went through like a pity party for a little while, and then I thought, you know what, Shauna, you're still walking, you can still see, because my husband said if I just stopped where I couldn't see anymore, he's going to dress me. I'm like, yeah, no, and I've seen the outfits he wants to dress me in. It's like I will make sure I don't go on. But you guys have taught me to laugh and how to laugh at myself and my kids. You know, when my words get all mixed up and I can't get words out, you know, they'll laugh with me or at me sometimes. That's another thing. The program taught me how to laugh again. I never thought I would. I didn't think things were so funny, and it is now. They taught me how to laugh at myself. And I'm just really grateful to be here. And that's all I got. Thank you.